welcome to Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher. Black Friday is almost here, and some already are plotting their moves. Still, sorting through those holiday sales flyers and coupons for the right deals is a hassle. Fortunately, there are apps for that. Kimberly Palmer has some ideas. She is the alpha consumer blogger at U.S. News & World Report and author of the new book, The Economy of You, Discover Your Inner Entrepreneur and Recession-Proof Your Life. Welcome to the show, Kimberly.
Thanks for having me, Anne.
So we'll ask our listeners if they have any ideas. What apps do you use to get at the best deals? Give us a call, 614-292-8513. Let us know your favorite. Kim, there are so many of these types of apps out there. How did you even start to choose?
It's hard. So I started by just figuring out what would help me the most when I do my shopping. I do a lot of online shopping.
Uh-huh.
And the ones that I picked to highlight are the ones that I found most useful.
One of the apps that you mentioned in your blog post is Slick Deals, where users of the app share what they know about discounts. Since the info is from other users and not directly from the retailers, how reliable is it?
That is a good question, but luckily the app developers do double check the information. So if something is posted, if something's incorrect, it might be briefly posted, mm-hmm. but it will quickly be taken down because other people will report that it doesn't work or it's not correct too. So you have the benefit of the crowd. They've sort of crowdsourced this research for you. So people are reporting in the coupons and people are also reporting on whether or not they're actually working.
And this is nationwide.
It is. Everything that I've included in my list is available nationwide and highlight coupons pulled from retailers, grocery stores from all across the country.
Price Blink is a browser add-on, but also an app. What's the difference between an add-on and an app?
I love the concept of a browser add-on because basically it just means that it's a little tool that you can download to your browser. So if you're in Safari or Chrome or whatever it is you use to surf the web, you can add this little tool to the top and you won't even notice it. You won't even know it's there until it comes time to actually make a purchase. So if you're about to buy something online, then this add-on will actually pop up and tell you if there's a cheaper price elsewhere. Mm. And it's really useful because then you might be about to buy a vacuum cleaner, for example, and then on Amazon, and then maybe over at some other online retailer, it's $50 less. And that will pop up, tell you that, so you can decide, oh, maybe I want to go to this different website and save some money.
And it'll only be online, though. It won't be able to be, you know, in the stores.
No. So okay. This particular one is online only.
You wrote that, is it Favato?
Yes, it is.
And it gathers grocery store and drugstore coupons.
This one is more about food. And of course, food is on a lot of our minds, too. We have a lot of cooking going on this season. So if you're trying to host people, you have a lot of groceries that you're buying, you can use this app to actually search for coupons related to food in your local store. So if you want to save some money on whatever kind of food purchases you're making, this helps you stay organized with that.
But drugstore coupons as well.
Yes, it also includes drugstores. That's right.
And any other stores?
This one is just focused on grocery stores and drugstores, and it does pull from all across the country, but it will give you a customized list of what's available locally. Because, of course, when it comes to grocery shopping, you probably are going to shop locally.
You're listening to Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm talking with Kimberly Palmer. She writes the Alpha Consumer blog at U.S. News & World Report. If you want to tell us how you shop using apps, if they help you, give us a call. Maybe you have a question for Kimberly. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. How do retailers accept coupons from an app? How does that work?
It sounds impossible. It sounds like science fiction, but it's actually the new thing in shopping. So all you have to do is pull up the coupon that you have on your app, that you have on your smartphone. You show it to the clerk when you're cashing out, when you're at the cash register, and they can simply scan it from your phone. So this is really new technology that's spreading. We're actually seeing it more than ever this year, even more than last last year. And it's really wonderful because not only can you stay more organized, but you save a lot of paper. You don't have to worry about having a printer or printing anything out. So this is actually my favorite new development.
You don't have to scan. Do you have to scan it, did you say, or not?
Whoever's checking you out will scan it for you. So all you have to do is hold up your smartphone.
Wow. You know, I have to go shuffling through my purse and looking for that little card they sent me in the mail. Is there a way to do, are most of them letting you download the coupons that way versus, let's say you get something in, you know, you get a flyer in the mail. It's for, you know, a coupon to a national retailer. Is there a way, are most of them giving you a way to put it right on your phone?
So it really depends on the retailer. The ones that are really at the forefront of this do make it possible for you to use either your printout or whatever you have on paper or your smartphone. But not every – this is sort of cutting-edge technology this year, so not everyone has this available, but stores increasingly do. And if you're shopping at the big box stores or a lot of the big national retailers, then you can be pretty sure you'll have this option.
Price Grabber. And Red Laser, we've talked about Red Laser before. They're both barcode scanning apps, and Byvia also allows users to scan barcodes. What are the similarities and differences between them?
Yeah, these are all great. So the similarities and what they're all based on is that when you're out shopping, you can pull up your phone, scan whatever product you're considering buying, and then these apps will tell you if there's a cheaper deal elsewhere, if you can buy the same product somewhere else for a lower price. And so that makes it so easy. You don't have to worry about the actual name of the product. All you have to do is pull up your phone and scan it. So very useful. They have small differences between them. And so, for example, at Price Grab, it's really technology focused. So if you're buying something that is electronics, then it has a lot of products listed under electronics. And the one difference too that stands out with Price Grabber is that you can set up price alerts. So say you don't want to buy the product immediately, but you might down the road, then Price Grabber will actually send you an email or a pop-up alert if you have the app downloaded to tell you that the price has dropped. So really just small differences between them, but really all of them are useful from that scanning perspective.
You know what I would love is if I had some app that would remind me when a coupon's getting ready to expire.
Yes, that is a great point, especially because a lot of we get emails now with deals in them, and sometimes we forget about them and then they've expired. And this app one isn't on my list because it's so new, but I will tell you, it's called Easily Do. It's a new app that recently launched, and it does just that. It will delete the old emails in your email box that have expired deals on them because, you know, so many of us have emails filled with these expired deals just cluttering things up. So it will actually delete that email for you. But what you're asking for is even more advanced, letting you know ahead of time when that email
before.
Is about to expire.
Yes.
Yeah, maybe you should invent that.
Gosh, maybe I should. How? Okay, so how does Catalog Spree make gift suggestions for family and friends? How does that work?
Yeah, so this one is really fun because it's pretty different from all the others. Catalog Spree actually has uploaded 350 catalogs, so those really photo-dense magazines we all get this time of year with tons of products and gift ideas. It's uploaded all of those, and so you can virtually scan them, again, saving a ton of paper. You can flip through just these virtual pages. It looks beautiful, all in color. And in terms of gift suggestions, you can customize your preferences, so you type in your favorite stores or your friends or family members' favorite stores, the kinds of products they like, and it will generate a list for you with ideas for what you might want to consider purchasing for them. So this is kind of like a fun virtual window shopping experience where you can just sit back wherever you're comfortable at home, and instead of going to the store or having those thick catalogs, just flip through your iPad or your phone to see what is available.
Can you send Catalog Spree to your friends and family?
You can. They actually have a really easy way of connecting virtually, so you can connect with your friends through the app, actually. And you can highlight things that you like, tag things that you think someone else might enjoy, and communicate that way.
Okay, Amy, I'm going to be sending that to you. I'm talking to Amy Jurevich, my associate producer over there. She's smiling at me like she doesn't believe me. You wrote that Sales Sorter is one app that is good for using at the mall. So if you are a mall rat on Black Friday, this is the one to bring.
This is so fun because if you're standing in a place that has a lot of retailers around you, of course, shopping malls are the best example, but other people who live in urban centers, anywhere where there's a lot of stores right in walking distance, you pull up this app and it tells you within a small radius, say 0.1 miles, where the best discounts are. And again, you can, like the other apps, you can customize with your favorite store. So if you have favorite stores in the malls, you just pull those stores out and it will tell you about the best discounts there. So you can be walking through the shopping mall and get pop-ups on this app telling you you're about to pass this discount. Coming up on your right, if you walk a little further, you'll see this discount. So that's really helpful for planning your route through the mall.
How does it do that?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It basically has this really big database that's constantly being updated from retailers of what kinds of deals they're offering, combined with some kind of geographic locating tool that is able to combine those two pieces of information and then generate what deals you're walking near.
Of course, you have to tell them where you're at.
You have to allow your app, your iPhone, to communicate mm-hmm. that. That's right.
Now, I'm told that Target has something like that. It's called Cartwheel.
Oh, great.
Well, I guess. yeah, which apps are best when you're preparing for and planning a shopping trip before you leave? And which are most helpful when you're in the middle of a shopping trip? It sounds like Sales Sorter's a good one for when you're there, but is there anything
yes.
good for preparing to map it
yes.
out?
Okay. My favorite one for preparing is RetailMeNot. And this is actually my overall favorite, too, because RetailMeNot collects coupon codes, all kinds of discount information from retailers. And, of course, you can, again, make your own list of custom favorites that it focuses on. And it will actually let you have all of those coupons pulled onto your phone. Again, no need to print anything out. And then when you're actually in the store, you just pull up your phone, have them scan the coupon. It makes for a really smooth shopping trip with no concerns over lost coupons or whether or not you have the right ones.
And it's all held in the RetailMeNot app.
That's correct.
So you just pull that one up and then all the coupons that you set aside are right there.
They're right there ready for you to use.
And then Mashalot allows users to share the wish lists and comments on friends' items. Now, that's sort of like catalogs free, right?
A little bit, but the difference is Mashalot really reminds me most of Facebook because it basically is letting you see what's trending right now. So whatever is really popular at certain stores or within certain categories, it pulls up those items, highlights them for you. And then if you allow it to connect with your friends in the app, then you can also see what other people are looking at, what they're commenting on. Again, you can send ideas or tag other people with products. And it also does show you the deals and prices. So there's that frugal element too. But this one is really about what's popular right now. It's another good one for getting gift ideas.
And it's sort of the kind of thing that you do with other people who are into apps.
Who are into apps and who are into shopping. So if you have a friend who is really tech savvy and also a shopper, it's perfect.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Kimberly Palmer, thanks for joining us today. Have a happy holiday.
Thank you. You too.
Kimberly Palmer writes the Alpha Consumer blog at U.S. News and World Report. Coming up, we're going to talk about people who are part of that app generation. So stay with us. We'll be right back on Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher. Today's youth are more tech-savvy than any previous generation. They chat with friends, share blow-by-blows of their everyday lives via social media, and shop or prepare to shop till they drop on Black Friday, all with the touch of an app. Smartphone technology has been almost universally adopted by so many that it can be hard to judge its impact, especially on a generation that's never known anything else. Joining us now to discuss these changes and the impact on our society is Howard Gardner. He is a professor of cognition and education at the Harvard Graduate School of Education, and he's co-author of a new book. It's called The App Generation: How Today's Youth Navigate Identity, Intimacy, and Imagination in a Digital World. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann.
So even though I'm talking to Kimberly Palmer about apps to use for shopping on Black Friday, she's a blogger at U.S. News and World Report, but when she's talking about sharing with all your friends this and that and everything else, she's really talking about other people about her age who take it for granted that you can shop by apps.
Right. As you said in the introduction, it's hard for what we call digital natives to imagine a world, for example, where you could get lost. Most people above, let's say, the age of 25 or 30 know that you can go down a street or be in a shopping center, and you have to find your way back. But nowadays, there's so many ways of identifying where you are in your own pad or phone, or having somebody else locate you, that the very notion of getting lost is becoming more and more evanescent or even disappearing. And in the work that Katie Davis and I did, we discovered that not only are kids very much involved in apps, but it becomes a consciousness on their part. They're looking for things which are quick, responsive, let you get where you want, what you want as quickly as possible. If it doesn't do that, you tend to blow it off and then look for another app. And the thing we worry about is what we call app dependence, and that is that you let the apps absolutely dictate everything that you do and when you do it. I mean, take shopping, for example. It's great if you want to get something and you can quickly find out a lot of information about it through one or two apps, but you shouldn't suspend your own judgment and say, you know, what are they trying to sell me? Are there some things I could find by actually touching this stuff myself, going to a store, doing some experimentation? And we contrast app dependence to app enablement. App enablement means the app actually opens your eyes to things that you wouldn't have seen or heard before, but it doesn't constrain the next move. And at the very extreme, we've coined the phrase super app. And super app applies to people and their parents who see their lives as a series of apps. First, you have to go to the right school and the right camp, and then you have to get the right college and the right internship, and then you have to get the right first job. And we talk about the super app as going from cradle to crematorium. And I find that kind of frightening. I don't know about you.
Tell me, let's go a little bit deeper on the app enablement. Can you give me an example of an app or of app enablement?
Sure. One of the things that we've talked about, we also show when we give talks, are drawing apps. Now, you can have drawing or painting apps which are simply paint by numbers. And this tells you exactly how to make something that looks just like the kind of thing you'd see in a postcard or the kind of thing you'd see on the wall in a hotel. But there also are other apps which just gives you a choice of different brush thicknesses, of different colors, and where you can create anything that you want. And the interesting thing about dependence and enablement, Anne, is it's partly in your own head. You can convert a app enablement into an app dependent by just copying what somebody else has done, even though the app itself may be very flexible. Mm-hmm. And thinking about this in terms of child development, initially kids learn from what their parents do or from what elder peers do, and the role models are very important. But in the end, it's up to you whether you become completely dependent on apps for, as we say in the book, your identity, your intimacy, your imagination, or whether you use the apps where they're helpful and then are ready to chuck them, what we call app transcendence. The funny thing here is to think about Steve Jobs. He probably had more to do with apps than anybody else in the world, and yet to think that he would ever have let his next step be dictated by what some app or super app had dictated would be ridiculous. He used technology when it was helpful, but then he went on walks, he went to India, he argued with people, and that, I would say, is an app enablement or an app transcendent perspective. And for Katie Davis, in my view, that's really what we should aspire to, not just become slave of the most recent app. And when it comes to identity, I think this is actually very important for people to understand. Nowadays, if you take a look at apps, they each have a very easily recognizable symbol. You know, it's the Twitter bird, or it's the shopping cart of Amazon. And kids often get pushed into thinking that they have to be every bit as slick and instantly recognizable as those apps. So they create a picture-perfect Facebook profile. Mm-hmm. They only put down the things where they look like they're having a wonderful time. They don't talk about any of the loneliness or miseriness that they may feel. And not only does this push them into a certain identity, but actually there's a lot of evidence suggests it can be depressing both for them and for others who look at their Facebook profile, because it suggests a kind of perfection which isn't realistic.
What did you make of that, the word of the year, selfie? Since you bring it up, I mean, all those pictures, those puckered lips, those pouty lips, it's so true. They all look alike.
And even, you know, when you're presumably sending something to somebody else, if you look in the corner of the screen, you see yourself there, and it's very hard to divert the attention from yourself. And there's a fair amount of soft evidence that kids nowadays have more difficulty being empathic, more difficulty putting themselves in other people's place, because there is such a much a focus on presentation of self. And one very alarming statistic, which we ran into from a social science survey, is a decade or two ago, when Americans were asked how many people they trusted to really deal with a secret of theirs, they would say about 3. Then this study was repeated recently, and the finding was that people only have 2 individuals who they feel
wow.
they can trust. And, of course, that's not only a third declination, but at the very time when many people have hundreds or even 1,000 friends, what does it mean to have so many people that, you know, are superficial digital friends, but not people whom you can have an intimate relationship with and bare your soul? And as you know, it's very different to either to insult somebody or to cut off a relationship online and, you know, then move on to the next app, so to speak, than it is to be in the same room with them, to see their reaction, not to be able to escape. And as Sherry Turkle and other people who've studied these intimate relations have indicated, kids are less and less prepared to have those serious, deep conversations where you reveal your own feelings and where you can look and see how other people feel. So these are not disastrous things, but these are things we should be on the lookout for mm-hmm. as teachers, parents, observers. I mean, one of the anecdotes that just slipped into mind was there are summer camps where when you go to camp, there's a burial service where you're supposed to bury your phone or your pad for the summer. And a fair number of parents actually give the kids 2 phones, and they put 1 phone in the teddy bear and zip it up so the child can secretly telephone even though the burial has taken place. Now, not only does this violate the trust of the camp, but it's also parents modeling that you don't have to pay attention to what anybody else asks you to do or what anything that you've pledged to do. And so,
and also that you can't live without your phone.
Right. I think it's very bad to feel that there's anything that you can't live without. Even though I'm no different from anybody else, I check my messages frequently, and I'm frustrated if I can't find my phone. But on the other hand, I lived for 60 years without that, mm-hmm. so I've got some resilience to fall back on. Mm-hmm. Just like I know if I'm driving and I get lost, you know, I've never gotten lost forever, and probably, except for Charlie and the MTA, there are very few people who've gotten lost forever.
You're listening to Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and my guest this hour is the co-author of a book. It's called The App Generation, How Today's Youth Navigate Identity, Intimacy, and Imagination in a Digital World. His name is Howard Gardner, and he is a professor of cognition and education at Harvard Graduate School of Education. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. You suggested that young people are more risk-averse than any previous generation, and I wonder if there's a connection between that and that how few people they consider a close friend or someone that they could confide in, and the reduction in that number.
Well, the finding of kids being risk averse was the single most surprising finding in the book, because we weren't expecting it at all. And someone said to me, well, but kids don't old people always say that kids are risk averse? And I say, I grew up in the 60s.
Averse?
And nobody accused us of not being risk averse.
No, we think of kids as taking risks all the time.
Yeah. I mean, nobody knows for sure what caused this risk aversion. But I suspect that when you have apps and when you live in a digital world where everything is so carefully prescribed, and it's so easy to go to the next step, that you kind of lose the habit of trying something out for yourself, of going in a direction people haven't gone before. And then I think of kids who, let's say, go and work on Wall Street or work in Hollywood or Silicon Valley. And clearly, from an outside perspective, they're taking risks, but they're risks which are told as part of their job. So if I assign a paper to students and I say, look, in this paper, I want you to take the wildest idea you can and amplify it, they'll do that, but it's no longer a risk because I've already signaled to them that that's what I want.
Right.
So it's more that when somebody gives you a direction and you say, well, I'm going to try something different just because I'm interested in it and I don't care that much what other people will think, that's what I call risk aversion. But, you know, a good social scientist would point out that when you have a declining economy, fewer jobs, and so on, there's a lot of pressures to be risk averse, even apart from the digital media. So this is a symptom we've seen. It was amazing how frequently it came up. I think the apps contribute, but probably other things contribute as well. It'd be interesting if suddenly there's an economic explosion and there are more jobs than ever before, whether people will be more risk averse. I will say, though, now that you mentioned it, that my own studies at Harvard indicate that sometimes the risk aversion is completely unnecessary. There are kids who can walk into any kind of job, and yet they're very, very afraid that if they don't take a certain job in a certain time, they'll never have a chance again. And that's very depressing to me, having been a digital immigrant, so to speak. I never thought that much about, you know, did I have to have this particular job at this particular time? And so I'd like to think that maybe if we're aware of this, we can give kids more opportunities, basically to fail without there being any terrible consequences.
If there's an app for that.
Well, you know about the helicopter parents, right?
Yes.
Right. If you have not only yourself in school, but your parents hovering over every act that you do, and if you get a bad grade, it's your parents who complain to the teacher. I've even heard from people at the workplace who parents complain to if they don't feel the child is being treated well in the first job.
I think these
border on pathology.
Yes.
Because at least in a democratic society, you have to form your own identity and make your own decisions. And sometimes that involves going against what your parents want.
Is it okay to send the employer a thank you note when they get a job? That's what I need to know. Do you have any advice for young people who've grown up with this? And when we say grow up, you know, really, the smartphone's been around long enough where there's people that were playing with them when they were 6 and 7 years old, and now they're, you know, they're getting up there. Do you have any advice for them?
Yes,
how to create some balance?
Sure. If you get too upset when your device isn't there, that's a bad sign. You ought to be able to have some time and some places where you go for reflection, for reverie, for daydreaming, just for conversations with friends, where you put the apparatus aside. When you do apply an app, which almost everybody does all the time, say, is this the only way I could have done this thing? What would I have done without it? And how can I go beyond it? The example I use is, if you want to get to someplace efficiently, almost everybody uses an app. But when you get there, I say, then open your eyes. And even if the app tells you 10 things to do, it's better for you to discover one of those things yourself and discover that maybe you don't like one of the things which was there, and maybe you discover something that was never there before, and you can build it into some kind of feedback mechanism. But don't become overly dependent, because then your life is really in the hands of some designer rather than in your own.
When you're talking about the risk averseness, I wanted to get back to that. Have you been able to suss out whether or not it is related to the economy versus their dependence on apps and people telling, you know, apps telling them where to go and what to buy and where to buy it?
I don't really have any great insight into that.
Yeah.
As I said, if suddenly we have an economic boom and people become less risk averse, they will have the answer. The way a social scientist would think about that would be to look at a number of different cultures pre-2008 and post-2008. But I will say that we interviewed people, over 100, who'd worked with kids for over 20 years. And this was such a constant refrain that I don't think it just began in 2008. Also, in the book, this is probably the most original research, we looked at kids' drawings and kids' stories over a 20-year period, and we scored them blind. That is, the scorers didn't know whether they came from 1990 or from 2010. And when I talk about this, I ask people to predict, do the kids become more creative or less creative? And it's a trick question, because in fact what we found was that in the graphic area, kids making designs, painting pictures, all of this submitted to magazines, they actually look more creative. When we looked at the use of language, the stories they told over the 20 years period, they became much more banal, much more trite. The language was much less imaginative. So there you have two areas you're looking at, and if the kids were risk-averse across the board, they would have been risk-averse in the case of the visual arts as well, and they weren't. Hmm. So this suggests that you can answer these questions, but I can't pretend I know the answer to the, was it the economic boom, was it the economic down meltdown,
sure.
Or was it the shall we say, the proliferation of apps, which has really only occurred in the last 5 or 6 years. So it's a great question if you want to write a thesis, Anne. That would be a good one to focus on.
Okay, well, and also this idea about planning ahead and where you should be and how, what kind of job you should have. You know, we've all heard about that 5-year plan and 10-year plan, which always has stymied me in a job interview. Never been much into it, but I did, you know, graduate from college in 82 when another big economic downturn, very few jobs in journalism, did something completely off the grid instead, and didn't really worry about it, didn't worry about what it meant to my future, just kind of plowed ahead. But you're saying that a lot of kids nowadays, they're constantly worried about that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think that living in a digital world, even apart from apps, which are very, very new, mm-hmm. the thing about things being ordered, rankable, estimated precision makes it more difficult to break out of that.
Wow.
And so when you ask about advice, we have to take control of our own lives, and to the extent that we are role models as parents, teachers, and so on, we have to show that we don't always go by the book. There's a quotation in the book which I thought a great deal about. A great philosopher, Albert North Whitehead, said, "The mark of civilization is the number of important acts which can be accomplished without thinking about them." At first, that sounds like it's very brilliant, but the more I thought about it, the more I thought, I don't want to concede to anybody else the decision about what's important. And what we all have to ask is this something that just because it can be done by digital means, is that the way it should be done? My mother just died, and it was such a difference between the people who took the time to write a personal letter and a personal note and enclose some kind of a memento, and the people who just send an email. It's that saying, when should I not be digital, is a question that I think we should be asking a lot, unless we simply believe that the utopia, which is described in Dave Eggers' new book, The Circle, is where everything is done for us and everything is known about us and there's no individual agency at all. I don't want to live in that kind of world.
There Eggers goes again. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Howard Gardner. Really appreciate it.
Good. Very good to talk with you.
Howard Gardner, he's professor of cognition and education at Harvard Graduate School of Education. He is co-author as well of a book, that's what we've been talking about, The App Generation, How Today's Youth Navigate Identity, Intimacy, and Imagination in a Digital World. Coming up, we will be talking with Geek.com tech blogger Russell Holly about what's out there in the tech world for Christmas and other holiday gifts. So stay with us. We'll be right back with Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher. Holiday shopping season has officially begun, even if Black Friday is still a few days away. Many will be flocking to stores this weekend for great deals, but some discount offers are already appearing online. Joining us now to talk about gadget gifts, where you can find them online perhaps, is Russell Holly, tech blogger for Geek.com. Welcome back to the show, Russell.
Hey, thanks.
Before we get to some of your recommendations, we did run out of time last week and didn't get to talk about the new phone from LG called the G Flex.
Yes.
Do you want to run by that real quick? Because that might be something someone wants to give somebody for Christmas.
It should be someone that someone wants to give somebody
like
for Christmas. Well, it has a lot of potential LG's user interface is a little quirky, so it's not quite as pretty as like HTC's or Samsung's. But this phone, the hardware is completely unique. It is a curved phone, by which I mean when you hold it in your hand, it is physically curved. It's not a flat phone. And it's actually designed to be partially flexible. So if you have the phone in your back pocket and you sit down on, concrete, or if you have it, with your keys in your pocket and you walk around all day long, it is a significantly more comfortable and more durable phone because the phone actually flexes. And if it gets scratches or scuffs, then it actually, self-repairs a bit.
Wait a minute. How does it self-repair? No, wait, just a cotton pick. Yeah.
The back of the phone is this matte material that has kind of a unique property to it. It's only the back of the phone, so it's not, like a complete self-healing process. But if you get scratches or scuffs on the back of the phone and then you take the phone into a warm environment, it has to be above, 65 degrees,
mm-hmm.
Then the scuffs will start disappearing. So you could effectively, and this was a video that was done demonstrating this by Marcos Brownlee. He actually took a knife to the back of the phone and scratched it up and then applied some heat to it, and the scratches were gone. He took some keys and scratched them against it, and the same process.
So does this mean that you don't need a case? Like I have my big rubberized case around my...
Well, so it increases the need for a case, but it certainly doesn't get rid of it altogether. A lot of people get cases because if you drop it and it lands on a corner, then you still run a reasonable chance of cracking the glass on the front of the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And that still exists because this is still a glass front phone, and we haven't totally moved to using plastics on the front of the phone or anything like that. But the phone is, incredibly flexible. It's designed to take these kind of hits and not be, the big bulky, phones that we used to have that were kind of durable design, where they were just gigantic bricks that you could throw on the ground and not have to worry about. This is just using some very clever science that's been, in development for the last couple of years. Some very clever tricks to make it so that, if you drop it, and the back gets scuffed up, then that's not permanent in most situations. Not in every situation, but in most situations. Mm-hmm. And if you are the kind of person to walk around with your phone in your back pocket, or you have your phone in your purse and it has a lot of stuff in it, or you slide it into your book bag and your book bag gets knocked around, you don't have to worry about any of those things damaging the phone without needing some kind of case. And all of those things I thought were really cool.
I'm interested in this shape too, because so many people just walk around with their phones now. They're hanging on to them. I mean, you're talking about backpacks and back pockets, and I pretty much find myself just holding my phone separately, and I see a lot of other people doing that. Is there some ergonomic thing going on there, or is it just a gimmick, or what?
So the curved design is supposed to be, more comfortable when it fits in your hand. And I haven't spent enough time with it to compare to the HTC One or the Moto X to see, how much more comfortable it really is. But the thing that LG has started doing that is really unique is their power button and their volume buttons are actually on the back of the phone.
Hmm.
So when you hold the phone in your hand, you hold the phone with one hand, your finger basically rests where the volume rocker and power buttons are. So you don't have to move your hand around to do a whole lot. You certainly don't have to use two hands to use the phone. So it really is designed to be more comfortable walking around single-handed.
You're listening to Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher, and Geek.com blogger, tech blogger Russell Holly is with us right now. We've just finished talking about the LG G Flex smartphone. If you have any more questions about that, now we're moving on to some tech dealy-doos for gifts for the holidays. If you have a question or an idea, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. So Amazon deals. Amazon's rolling out deals in a new way this year. Tell us about it.
Well, so this is something that Amazon has done for a little while now.
Okay.
But they're doing it for a much longer period now. This was last year was something that they focused on for kind of Cyber Monday, but this time they're going to take it the entire weekend. And it's interesting because you can go now and kind of plan ahead and set yourself schedules for when you would go and do these kind of things. But instead of having sales that are persistent across, an entire day or something like that, Amazon has set up hundreds of sales that are only available for like 1 and 2 hour blocks. And inside those 1 and 2 hour blocks, they have a specific number of those items that they can sell. So what they have now, if you go to the Amazon website and you click, they have a gigantic Black Friday banner and you click there, it actually has a scrolling list from now until Monday that you can look through that says, you know, we have this thing on sale, but it'll be on sale for, you know, 1 hour and 20 minutes. And we have, you know, 900 of them to sell. But it gives you the specific times that they are going to be on sale.
Oh, so, all right. So they have a schedule that you can look at.
Right.
Okay.
Right. They have a schedule. So basically it would be, you know, you can at you know, 12:30 tomorrow, you know, or at, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning, Monday morning, depending on how lucky you are, the thing that you would want, and it's everything. It's video games, it's coffee makers, it's televisions. It's a significant cutout of what's on Amazon's website is available through this Black Friday deal. And they're constantly rolling for just about every hour from now until the end of Monday.
Interesting. Have you purchased anything yet?
I haven't purchased anything yet. I was actually fortunate, and a lot of the things that I wanted to get for people were things that I already got. So,
hey, did they make the change because it was so successful on a shorter or a, you know, limited basis last year?
I think that the time basis is definitely something that's successful for them. It gives them a controlled environment that they can work in, and it also keeps people on the site because, yep, you know, while you can certainly scroll around and keep yourself, you know, plan yourself a day or two in advance, I think most people just refresh every once in a while and see what's on sale. And so that's a good metric for them to have, I think.
The HP split, is it X2 or times 2?
It's X2.
X2. Okay. I'm so old. HP split X2. Another deal you're recommending is a computer from HP. It's called the Split X2. Okay. It's sort of a laptop and tablet combo.
It is. This is HP's. HP released a couple of different laptops that were these kind of laptop-tablet hybrids, and they're all really nice. They have extra battery built into the keyboard so that when you connect it to the keyboard, you get a little extra juice. If you decide you don't want to use it in tablet mode, it runs Windows 8.1, and they are normally a little on the expensive side, but for Black Friday, they're actually going to be $499, which is a really good deal for the hardware that's in them. They have really nice screens. The keyboards are nice and comfortable as far as laptops go. And the hardware is competitive with, you know, what's on the shelves right now. So it's definitely a good deal for $499. It was the best of the laptop deals that I've seen so far.
Okay. Any drawbacks?
I mean, it's a laptop tablet hybrid, so they're a little on the small side.
Okay.
If you're used to a 15-inch or a 17-inch laptop, then these are smaller because they're closer to 10 and 13 inches, depending on which model you're interested in. But you know, HP did a lot of really good work to make sure that they're comfortable, I think. I've used one for a little while, and they were very comfortable.
Okay, so you have some video game deals. You have some recommendations that will be going on sale. Skylanders.
If you are shopping for little people specifically, as far as this goes, if you have cousins or nieces or nephews or children that you're shopping for, chances are those kids are familiar with Skylander, Swap Force, and Disney Infinity.
Okay.
These are two different games that work in very much the same way, in that they have figurines that get put on little pads that plug into the television that, you know, cause this kind of interactive game experience across the Xbox and the PlayStation and the Wii U and even the DS, the Nintendo DS. So if you have, a little person that you're shopping for, the starter packs for Skylanders and Disney Infinity are both going to be $38, where they are usually much closer to $100.
Yeah.
And the individual models that you would buy for these are going to be buy one, get one in most places. It's a good time to shop for those specifically, especially since last year at the same time, Skylanders was basically sold out everywhere. It was an incredibly popular game at the time, and Disney has responded to that by releasing their own game with Disney Infinity that takes all of the popular Disney characters and puts them in a game.
Before we move on, you mentioned Xbox. Was there anything noteworthy about the release of the Xbox One last week? I noticed that there were a few complaints, but not much.
The Xbox One, sold surprisingly well. It also had a little over a million consoles sold on the first day, very similar to what Sony did with the PlayStation 4, although it's worth noting that the Xbox One was a semi-global release, where it was in the UK and in several other countries, whereas the PlayStation 4 was US only. So as far as region goes, it stands to reason that Sony probably sold more of them for whatever that's worth. But there have been some reports of grinding noise that comes from a very small selection of the Xbox Ones where the Blu-ray drive on the inside, you'll go to put a disc in, and instead of playing the game, you get this horrible grinding sound that really sounds like your disc is being eaten. But apparently that's not what's happening. The disc, when you take it out, is still perfectly fine. It just doesn't play the game. And because the Xbox One is also a digital game console, if you have this problem and Microsoft says it's going to take a little while to replace it, they're giving mixed reports depending on where you purchased it from. But if you run into those situations, then you can still play the digital versions of the games.
Oh, yeah, and I skipped over this. Google's Chromecast. What's one of your recommendations for a gift deal?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the Chromecast.
Yeah, remind us what it is and how it works and why it's such a great deal.
The Chromecast is this little tiny HDMI stick that plugs into the back of the television, and the idea is that you plug it into the back of your TV and just kind of forget that it exists. And if you have an iPhone or an Android phone or a tablet or a PC, then they have apps for each of these things that allow you to wirelessly send content from those devices to your television using this Chromecast. And it supports Netflix and Hulu Plus and HBO Go and YouTube. And if you're on a laptop, you can take individual website tabs and shoot them across to the little HDMI stick. They're normally $35, but in most places they're going to be $30. And if you do not know what to get someone for the holiday season, but they have an Android phone or an iPhone and, you know, any reasonable new television, then these Chromecasts are particularly cool because they support a protocol called HDMI control, which allows you to actually send content to the HDMI stick, and it'll actually turn the TV on for you and set it to the right channel. To allow for the content to be shown, which would end up being pretty cool when you go to use it.
Yeah, anything that could turn my TV on easily and quickly
it would
be great because I'm one of those. I don't understand why it has to be such a hassle. All right, so you said any reasonably new television?
As long as it has an HDMI port, it'll work. But if you have purchased the television within the last 2 or 3 years, then that HDMI port will have the ability to turn the television on, which is the really cool feature. But it'll work with anything with an HDMI port.
Okay. We have a Facebook message. They want to know what your pick is for the best tablet on Black Friday.
The best tablet on Black Friday. I didn't see any tablets in particular that were on sale that, you know, really had this kind of killer deal. iPads are still pretty much the same price. I can't stress enough that you should not purchase an iPad 2. There are a couple of them that are on sale for various retailers. The iPad 2, Apple, for whatever reason, decided that they were going to sell this thing. It's not a great display. It's basically a three-year-old piece of hardware that a lot of retailers are selling right now. I would not suggest that. If you're going to get an iPad, spend the extra money and get the iPad Air or the Retina iPad Mini, depending on you know, what your size preference is, if you want a 7-inch tablet or a 10-inch tablet. If you are looking for a tablet for kids, the Nabi tablet, N-A-B-I tablet, is available in a lot of places for $100, and that thing is basically indestructible. They put a gigantic rubber bumper around a 7-inch tablet, and I've watched children spike this thing on the ground and not, you know, had any problems with it. So if you're looking for a tablet for a child, that would be fine. If you're looking for just a regular 7-inch tablet and you're okay with Android, Google's Nexus 7 is still the best deal that you can get for a 7-inch tablet. It's incredibly powerful with a really nice screen, and it's only like $230. There may be a couple of places that'll have them for $200 during the Black Friday, but it's, you know, it's a pretty minor sale for that. But that's definitely a good tablet to recommend for just about anybody.
I guess they're not putting them on sale very much because it sounds like it's probably one of the big gift items of the season.
It is definitely one of the big gift items of the season. And also there's a lot of these companies like Walmart, I think, has a deal with, you know, with a manufacturer. They have a really cheap Android tablet that's only going to be like $49. And as appealing as $49 sounds, that tablet is just not worth using. It's really not a great device at all. So there's a lot of those that are coming around. If you come across a tablet where the price is too good to be true, it absolutely is, from what I can tell this year. A lot of the you know, cheaper kind of no-name tablets that are being marked down because they're just not very good. So I would avoid those if possible.
Hey, is Google's Chromecast, is that something you can fit in a stocking?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the Chromecast is itty-bitty. You can put that in just about anything.
Well, it sounds like the ultimate stocking stuffer. Russell Holly, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your ideas, and I hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday.
Thank you. You too.
And to all of our listeners out there, I hope you all have a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday. I want to say thanks to the Allside staff, producer Michael DeBonis, associate producer Amy Jurevich, assistant producer Rachel Quimby, production assistants Karim Chaban, Julia Hyder, Andrew Zissler, and Leticia Wiggins, with video production by Rich Karsmitsky and Amber Karsmitsky. Alan DeCenzo is a composer of our theme music, WOSU News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson, Radio Operations Director Kevin Petrola, Senior Broadcast Technician Eric French. Be sure to like All Sides on Facebook and follow the show on Twitter at WOSU All Sides. You can follow me and on Twitter too at Ann Fisher WOSU. Thanks again for listening and have a very happy holiday. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is listener supported WOSU 89.7. And WOSU HD1 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, a service of WOSU Public Media.